Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 129, University of Georgia Football Preview, recorded Monday, August 18th, 2014. Tonight, newcomer Andrew Hall of DudeYouCrazy.net and Bleacher Report join Shane Bailey, Nick Jones, and Britton Burton to look at the Georgia Bulldogs. The roundtable looks at the injury bug that hit the team last year and discusses what that means for this year's Bulldogs. They also look at fifth-year quarterback Hudson Mason and what his knowledge of the program means to the offense. Next, they discuss what kind of changes to expect from the new defensive coordinator and will it be enough to win the East. All this and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, hot and heavy into the middle of our SEC previews. We're going back east again, so we're flip-flopping. I like the flip-flop. That works well. We're going to do a little University of Georgia this evening. And to catch you up here, if you're new to this, we do a video version of this, an audio podcast. We're on Stitcher, anywhere you can get an RSS feed, and it's SEC SRT. Just remember those six little letters. Find those. Do that Google search. That's the easiest way to find us, and you can get us any way that's convenient for you, whether it's on Facebook, iTunes, YouTube, wherever it is that's best for you to get the content. It's going to be out there for you. We appreciate you listening. Our last night preview, you know, we did our Texas A&M preview, and those A&M fans were quick to let us know what they thought about where we're going to have those guys play. So we appreciate them letting us know what their thoughts are. I'm going to be really anxious to see what happens on the field, to see who's right or wrong with that. But we've had a pretty good track record so far over the last 3+ years we've done this. Looks like we've got a little technical difficulty with a couple of folks frozen up on my bottom. So I'm going to make some introductions. I think Britton is still with me. Britton, are you there?
I'm with you.
Awesome. Britton, glad you're back again. So we're going to get hot and heavy in this. Andrew, are you there?
I am here.
All right.
Happy to be here.
Your screen was frozen at the bottom, so I wasn't quite sure what happened there. We've got Andrew Hall. He writes for Bleacher Report some. He's got his own site. Tell us a little bit about that. He's our Georgia guy, so we actually have someone from Georgia to give us their perspective. So it's nice to get that real fan's perspective from that school. So welcome for the first time, Andrew.
Thanks. Happy to be here. Absolutely. I'm going to actually turn my camera off, so maybe my feed's a little stronger, but I'm still very much here. You can see a picture of me eating donuts if you're watching the video. But I run a little site, DudeYouCrazy.net, as well as the Dude You podcast with some good buddies and much better writers than I am, and happy to represent the Georgia contingency.
Well, we'll see how straight on you are here in a little bit about what we think about Georgia. And then Nick Jones, he writes for Bama Hammer. He's all settled in down at Tuscaloosa. Nick, are you with us?
I'm here, Shane. Can you hear me?
I am. Yeah, there we go. Video's good, too, when it went back, but your little icon at the bottom was just frozen, so I'm glad you're able to be here.
Yeah, good to be here. Good to have somebody else on with us, too.
Yeah, glad to get that new perspective, glad to be back at this. I mean, we are almost 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks. We are 10 days from the actual kickoff, so it's right around the corner. We've got a few more teams left. We're over the halfway mark. Well on our way finishing up this SEC preview. So if your team hasn't happened yet, it's going to happen in the next 10 days. If it already has happened, go back and take a listen. I'd love to hear what you think about what we've looked at as far as your team and what we think they're going to do. But, you know, we're going to start off talking about Georgia and talk about them for the next, you know, I'd like to say half hour, but it's going to be like the next hour. So buckle in, get ready for that nice long commute, and you've got something to get you to work and back. So, you know, the Georgia Bulldogs, they're just misleading to me. As I look and I was doing this preview, it's like, man, they had so much talent. And I just forgot how much of the injury bug that hit them and just decimated that program. And you look at what they've got coming back, and from all indications, not only coming back, but healthy. And I know, Andrew, we'll let you talk here first in a second. But, you know, now that these guys are back and they're healthy, you know, they really have increased, in my feelings, the potential to really compete for the SEC East. I was giving them a chance at the beginning of the season, and then as I started digging in and started, you know, looking at the team in depth a little more, it's like, man, they're for real.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at this team, especially on the offensive side of the football, they actually return almost over two-thirds, actually, not almost, over two-thirds of their receiving and rushing yards dating back through the last two seasons. So that's not just a lot coming back from 2013. That's a lot coming back all the way back from 2012. So extremely talented on offense. I mean, the general notion, especially among Georgia fans, is the defense has to be better. It's got to take a step forward, especially under this new coaching staff that everyone's really excited about. Whether that's an overnight fix, I think that remains to be seen. I'm not quite as optimistic on that, but yeah, there's just too much talent coming back for them not to be a force in the East.
Britton, I'll let you talk for a second on the defensive side, because you guys are pretty familiar with that defensive coordinator that was brought over to Georgia. I mean, Pruitt came from Alabama. I personally think that there's an opportunity for him to come in right away. What's your thoughts there?
Yeah, to me, that's where the biggest difference is going to be. I mean, obviously, you already touched on it. The injuries from last year was just, I mean, it was devastating. You know, there's no way that they could have recovered and achieved the goal that they had at the beginning of the season, which was getting back to the SEC championship with the just rash of injuries they had. But the other big thing is that for whatever reason, Todd Grantham just could not seem to get that defense right. And, you know, he had a good reputation coming in. We know Georgia recruits well. They're going to be top 10, top 15 classes consistently every year. Georgia has a great recruiting base coming out of high school. So the other good thing is they already made that move to the 3-4 with Grantham. Now you have Pruitt coming in, who was a great defensive backs coach at Alabama. Went to Florida State, and granted it was only 1 year. I think he was only there 1 year. But obviously, you know, they had success and they looked really good defensively. And I think that they've got the right guy there now to take what has already been recruited well for the 3-4 and turn it into what it should have been the last 2 years under Grantham. But for whatever reason, it never materialized. I think he's going to make it materialize and take advantage of that talent. And that defense is going to be really good. It doesn't hurt that they also have, what, like 10 of the 11 starters from last year returning? I mean, that's always a help too.
Nick, are you back with us? No, he's trying to join us. So we'll get Nick's take on that in a minute. You're right in that Pruitt really, he's going to set the tone. And from a talent perspective, I mean, if you look at the way Georgia's recruited, they've got the talent. They've got the 3-4, even 5 stars coming in on the defensive side. So it's just a matter of, are they tough enough? Are they playing the way they need to? And what I'm seeing just from way out there on the outside is it's a whole new mindset that he's bringing into the program. It's not just you're going to do things. You're going to do things my way, and it's my way's the right way. And I think the defensive team is really buying into that. So I think you're going to see a much stronger, tougher defense coming out on the field this year than you've seen in the last couple of years through Grantham.
Yeah, Andrew, what's the Georgia fan base feel on Grantham? Why did it never really come together under him?
I think the thing that was most frustrating, speaking from a fan standpoint, is just the general lack of knowledge out there. I mean, you saw these really talented defensive backs, guys who are now making NFL careers, whether it's Sanders Cummings, who at times was lost in the shuffle and is playing cornerback and safety at the NFL level, Carter Rambo, Sean Williams, these guys who were NFL caliber talents that were kind of lost in the secondary. And I think it was easy to kind of overlook that for a while when you had guys like Jarvis Jones making big plays in the front seven and Grantham coaching those guys up. But he didn't really know how to reach folks in the secondary, and you saw that last year. And last year there was kind of two frustrations. One was young players not knowing where to be, And the other was, why are there so many young players playing pivotal roles in the secondary to begin with? And the bottom line and the, you know, common denominator with both of those problems was Grantham was unable to teach folks in the secondary. And that's the other thing that people seem to overlook with Pruitt is, yeah, he's a great defensive coordinator. We've only seen him do that for 1 year, but he's a defensive backs coach. Right. That's what his pedigree is. He's going to be able to teach these guys. He's got a high school background. He's going to simplify terminology, and he wants open competition, which was something that Grantham tended to shut the door on. He kind of had his guys. He let his guys play. Georgia fans were thrilled, for the most part, to see him go. I think he was maybe slightly underappreciated in that regard, but to be able to replace him with a big name says a lot about Georgia's program. I mean, when Georgia brought Grantham in, I was excited, but he wasn't the big name guy that you felt like Georgia really went out and got. Pruitt's the perfect antidote to that.
Yeah, that was definitely a home run. Is there any, this is kind of backtracking a little bit, but I was surprised by that hire just because, you know, you just won a national championship, you're at Florida State, the king of the ACC, hands down. Is there any thing that non-Georgia fans don't know about why he made that move?
I think the story that always came out was the fact that, you know, Pruitt's dad was a coach, and they went to a coaching clinic with Mark Richt several years back, and, you know, his dad basically said, Jeremy, if you ever get a chance to coach under a guy like that, you take it. That's the story that came out a lot. There's also Florida State has pooled coaching salary increases for assistants, so basically the entire unit gets a set amount of increase based on performance. And, you know, a story that got a lot of play early on was even if they had taken that entire pool of bonuses and pay increases and given it to Pruitt, it wouldn't have been as much as Georgia could have offered. That being said, he really didn't give Florida State a chance to match it. I think he wanted to go. I think he was ready to move on for whatever reasons, and there's all kinds of rumors there that I prefer not to speculate too much on because I think they're a little bit ridiculous. But, you know, I guess we could speculate a little bit. Let's have a little fun with it. But the most common was that Pruitt was taken with the ladies and that his then-fiancée, now-wife, said, we got to get out of here. And sounds completely erroneous to me because if you've ever been to Athens, Georgia, you know that's not the place you see your, send your husband with wandering eyes.
I was just about to say, you leave Florida State to go to the Hedges. I don't know. I don't
think that makes it any better.
No.
And, guys, Andrew mentioned sorry, I dropped off there for a second. But Andrew mentioned that, you know, his high school background, and I always like bringing this up. I may have brought it up on the podcast before, but being a native of Birmingham, I saw, you know, Coach Pruitt hands-on in the high school ranks, and, you know, national TV did as well because he was a member of that two-a-day staff on MTV, if you guys remember that. But less than 10 years ago, 8 years ago, actually, he was at the same position that he will be coaching in Georgia at Hoover High School. And, I mean, we talk about, you know, like
it's Gus Malzahn.
Gus Malzahn and, you know, these, you know, it trickling down or from the bottom instead of from the NFL. And this is crazy to think about for me. And, I mean, it's hats off to Jeremy Pruitt. And it did raise some speculation in my mind, winning a national championship and, you know, leaving Alabama to go to Florida State. Obviously, that was a step up to be the defensive coordinator, you know, after training under Nick Saban and Kirby Smart and the guys, and then going to another Nick Saban disciple and Jimbo Fisher. But it was kind of an interesting lateral move, I guess you would say. But he's going to put Georgia in a great position. He's back in the SEC now, and with his specialty in the secondary, we'll probably hit on this later, but that is a place that Georgia's going to need to develop some young talent. But they have some talent, and they can really make something happen if this defense steps it up this year.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned the lateral move. The other side to this, too, is I think Pruitt is a guy who has head coaching aspirations. I mean, you're hard-pressed to get to that level of success that quickly without having, you know, the aspiration to move up. And in a lot of ways, going to a quote-unquote broken defense and fixing that and repairing that probably makes you an even hotter candidate, even if you don't win a national championship, because it shows your ability to work with what is there on a repeated basis. Obviously, he came into Florida State and did a great job the same way he had at Alabama as a position coach. But if he does that one more time, that's just one more kind of check in your favorable column, because so much of coaching is what can you do in a specific situation. If he succeeds at Georgia, well, there's another completely unique situation that he's done really well
in. Yeah, that's a great point, because if you look at you know, what he inherited at Florida State, Stoops left him with the top 10 in the country defense when he went to Kentucky. So it's not like the cupboard was bare or anything was broken at Florida State. He just needed to maintain status quo when he
not
had
screwed up.
Yeah, you know, here's the keys to the house. Don't mess anything up.
Right.
You know, it was that kind of. So that's a great point that, you know, with Georgia struggled in defense, and they have for the last couple of years, to come in and add that piece to this puzzle. All of a sudden, you take the Georgia Bulldogs from a potential contender for the East Championship every year to a national championship contender every year. Anything else we need to talk about on the defensive side of the ball before we look at this offense?
I think the biggest thing really is, and we've touched on this already, but the secondary. I mean, I think it's easy to focus on the attrition, so to speak, and you didn't have anybody go to the NFL from the secondary, but Trey Matthews is gone, Josh Harvey Clemens gone, Shaq Wiggins, who started a good portion of the season at cornerback, is gone. You know, he famously left Georgia because he wanted to go somewhere that understood his sense of humor and ironically followed Grantham to Louisville. So you think about those, and there's a lot of lost talent, but at the same time, those guys struggled to ever really cement themselves as the go-to guy at a given position under a coach who liked to have a go-to guy. So that is gone, but there's also a lot of playmakers. A guy like J.J. Green, who actually played running back last year, volunteered to switch to the defensive side of the ball, said that he missed hitting people, wanted to hit people instead of being hit, which I love to hear, especially coming from a defensive back. You've got a lot more open competition, which is what Pruitt is all about. There's still an awful lot of talent back there. They may not be extremely deep, but if that unit can stay healthy, it's not beyond measure to think that it could improve greatly under good coaching.
Now, did you say Shaq Wiggins transferred to Louisville?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You also lost Clemens, too, Harvey Clemens, right?
Harvey Clemens is there as well. He was dismissed. You know, the thing that made Wiggins unique is that it was completely of his own volition. And, I mean, he even went through spring practice, so the timing of it was a little bit odd. The timing was such that it was early May, and when it first came out, the rumor instantly hit just because of timing that there might have been some academic issues, but there really were not. Wiggins just wanted to go somewhere else, and by all accounts, Pruitt's bringing a much harder nose to this defense, which is exactly what it needed, but Wiggins was not in the cards to be part of that revolution.
Maybe he wanted to get motorcycle lessons from the new ball coach.
That's right.
Or at least meet some volleyball players.
That coach knows how to find those.
Yep.
So with a tougher defense, I mean, if you look at Georgia's program and you take out the injuries, because that's the factor it's like the turnover ratio that's been our theme throughout this thing. It's something you can't control to some degree, whether you turn the ball over or not turn the ball over. At the end of the game, sometimes luck has a lot to do with it. And the same thing happens with the injury bug. Take the injury bug out. This increase in defensive philosophy really bolsters and rounds out a tremendous program, wouldn't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you can work on an assumption, which I'd love to see come to fruition, that injuries aren't going to be a factor for Georgia's offense, which they really were last year, and that the defensive side of the ball is going to progress under a new coach with a lot of young talent the way we kind of thought that it would last year. You combine those two things and you shore up some special teams errors that have just plagued Georgia for the last several years to an extent that's embarrassing. You shore up those things and all of a sudden this is a team that, again, you're not talking about just getting back to Atlanta. You're talking about that new college football playoff. And I mean, I think that's what has Georgia fans so optimistic. That's not to say that all the questions are answered by any means, though. So certainly cause for optimism, even if it's cautious.
And now on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, from the outside looking in, you've got Hudson Mason taking over. But, I mean, he's a redshirt fifth-year senior. He's been with this program the entire time. The offense hasn't changed that much. I mean, you got to think that he's going to walk in knowing this playbook and how to run this offense. I mean, just like Aaron Murray, as far as the ability to know and read the defense and the way they're setting up against the offensive formations. It should just be an easy, let's place you in here kind of fit for Hudson, should it not?
Yeah, it really should be. I mean, again, he's been around the program, all the things you just said. And I think what's nice about Mason is just his knowledge of the playbook. I think his knowledge is every bit as good as that of Murray. He may not have the game experience. Obviously, he doesn't. Murray was a four-year starter. Hudson Mason started two games. But he's got that knowledge. He's a Georgia-caliber quarterback, and what I mean by that is he can make every throw Mike Bobo, the offensive coordinator, puts in front of him. Is he going to have the upside of Aaron Murray? Well, obviously not. If he did, he would have been in the middle of a quarterback controversy for each of the last 4 years. But that being said, this is an offense that they can get some folks back healthy. I mean, I think Mason could make a run at just about any single-season record that Murray currently has if they choose to go that route. Personally, I think they're going to run the ball a little bit more to give that young defense a little more time to grow. But he's going to have as many weapons as just about anybody in the SEC. And that's what's going to be fun to watch and hopefully rewarding for a guy who's been incredibly patient.
So we know that, you know, Todd Gurley's the man. I think he's the best back in the country. We know he's going to be there. Hopefully he's healthy again this year. We feel pretty confident in Mason, despite the fact he doesn't have a ton of experience, but he is an older guy and he should know what he's doing. Are there questions, though, on the offensive line and how confident are Georgia people with their ability to run the ball when the defense knows it's coming and to give their new quarterback some time to breathe and learn and all the things that you just talked about?
Yeah, there are definitely some questions on the line. Georgia's replacing three starters, guys who, you know, you look back at their resume, and sometimes that's hard to look at for a lineman, but you look back at them, and they're guys who are starting 13 games every year, 14 games in 2012. So you're replacing three starters there. I'm a little bit concerned that a new starting five on the offensive line has not quite been settled yet. You've got a center who's back for the third year as a starter, and you've got two tackles returning, John Theus and Colton Houston. But Colton Houston is bouncing between guard and tackle. Theus is bouncing between left and right tackle. You've got other guys working their way, trying to compete. Watts Dantzler, who's a senior and kind of a social media star. Most people know Watts Dantzler is the guy who says funny things about spring break, but he's actually a really talented offensive lineman if he can find a place. He's 6'7", over 300 pounds, and pretty athletic. Would like to see him kind of cement really a tackle position and see Colton Houston move into guard, which would be, you know, a position change for him. But there's still some question marks there. There's also question marks at tight end. In the past, Georgia has really relied kind of on a two tight end system, but not necessarily two tight ends on the field at the same time, but they like to use multiple weapons. Jay Rome is the only returning tight end with game experience, and he's really struggling to get and stay healthy. So that's a big question mark. It looks like a fullback turned tight end, Quavon Hicks, is probably going to be the guy to go to if Jay Rome is not healthy. So there's some concerns there. Also a few minor questions as far as the fullback position. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, if we're looking at this Georgia offense, we're probably really nitpicking if we're fretting too much.
I mean, but you're looking at that offensive line, and like you said, you know, your center is probably one of the most important parts on the line, and he has the game experience. I mean, he's got, what'd you say, 3 years starting, something like that?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, this will be his third year.
You know, when you've got a brand new quarterback coming in that's taking over the helm to run a show, you know, you kind of want that stability right there, and that's what you get. And then you've also, you know, you've got some young guys, but you've got other guys that have experience, and even the young guys, it's not like they haven't had game time experience. They might not be the 3 year starter that you had last year on the line, but you've got some guys out there that have seen real action. So it's just a matter of them becoming comfortable with where they want to be and how you're going to get them to perform.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think the big thing is not so much, it's not a question of quality. It's not a question of capability, almost a question of cohesion. And that, you know, from a fan's perspective, you'd like to say, this is our left tackle, this is our right tackle, our left guard, our right guard, or center. And in reality, there's only one guy cemented, and it is that center position, which is incredibly important. But you'd like to see some guys settle in because it seems, you know, from the outside looking in, the longer somebody can be training specifically at right guard, the better we're going to be feeling about a running play coming in right behind him. So you definitely like to see that. But again, you're really exactly right, and we are. We're getting too critical if we think these guys aren't capable, because they are, and they've played well in games.
So let's talk about Marshall. What fears do you have? And I've got my opinions on this, but you know he's coming off of that ACL. You know, do you think he's going to have fear coming in there? Is he going to be timid? Is he going to be coming out hitting hard, making cuts, testing that ACL quick and early, and cement himself as that second running back?
I think he's going to come out firing on all cylinders. Marshall's a guy, you got to remember that coming out of high school, he was the big name running back. I mean, he had the press conference committed early in December and, you know, to his credit said, now we're going to go get Todd Gurley and started recruiting Gurley. But Marshall was the back everybody wanted to see in that season opener against Buffalo in 2012. And Todd Gurley kind of stole the show, and they're great friends. They're very competitive. But I think one of the things that's most to Marshall's advantage is he does feel like he's got kind of the shorter end of the stick, so to speak. I think he does want to come out and prove that, hey, I still am that back. All that upside that you see in Todd Gurley, I've got that. Yeah, I was out last season for the bulk of the year, and yeah, I was injured, but I'm ready to play. And, you know, he, by all accounts, is looking strong. He's making cuts. He's ready to go. I think Georgia will use him in more creative ways. I think I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Georgia do some more true two-back systems without a solid fullback. They may start putting both of those guys back there. We saw what Todd Gurley could do in the passing game last year. I mean, he had over 400 yards receiving, but the truth of it is Keith Marshall is a much better threat on a little bubble screen or on a little crossing route in which he gets kind of out of the flats and takes something and just runs with it. So I think Marshall's going to be used in a variety of ways. He has a very different dimension than what Gurley can do. In some ways, he might be more versatile, which sounds absolutely ludicrous because we've seen Gurley run inside, run outside, run through people, run around people, catch the ball, run the ball. We've seen him do it all, but I think Marshall brings a whole other element to the table. I mean, he had a touchdown catch 2 years ago against Nebraska in the bowl game that was one of the best catches just as a receiver making a play and getting a ball right at the pylon that I've seen a Georgia player have since A.J. Green was there. I mean, it was that good of a catch. He's got that kind of hands, that kind of body control. He's really going to be special. I think he's a lock for that number two spot, assuming he stays healthy, and we don't have a reason to think he won't.
And let me tell you what, guys. I mean, Andrew's hit on a lot of great things, but coming from Alabama's point of view, I mean, Alabama's loaded at running back, but this is one of the things when I actually sit down and thought about it is, although part of me kind of forgets what it looks like to have Marshall and Gurley in the same backfield because both of them struggle with injury. Gurley's been playing through some injuries. I mean, he's a tough running back, but he still hasn't been 100% in, you know, several games, and it's going to be very interesting to see, kind of scary, you know, what they're going to do to a team like Clemson and some of these bigger name opponents who may not have the defenses to stack up. But I'll tell you what, Keith Marshall is one of those guys that he's almost screams like freak of nature to me. Some people forget how fast he is. Some people, you know, like Andrew said, forget how athletic and how great of a receiver he is as well. And Marshall kind of reminds me of a guy like Kenyon Drake at Alabama. He's probably not even going to hit the field very much this year, but he provides some explosiveness, and his breakaway potential could be something. He's more of a home run hitter. He may not be that guy that can run in between the tackles all the time like Gurley, who's a freak of nature. But at the same time, I mean, he could bust an 80-yard run in the blink of an eye and, you know, leave even the fastest cornerbacks watching him. So it's pretty interesting to see that. And I think, you know, having these two guys in the stalls waiting, you know, to hand from Hudson Mason to hand the ball off to him is going to be pretty amazing.
Now, you just called them both freaks of nature, but they're freaks of nature for different things, Nick.
I know.
But you do get a kind of a compliment of the power running that you're going to get with Gurley and just the speed that Marshall can bring to it. I mean, that's just a great 1-2 tandem that you've seen work time and time again. And just name a system that's had that dual threat type of running back system, and it can work wonders for him, especially with, like you said, being able to relieve that threat and know that Mason has the flexibility to hand the ball off with comfort, to know that they're going to just pick up first downs at will. With the running game, makes that passing game so much easier and comfortable for a quarterback like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really where the value comes in with both of these guys, especially when you bring in any questions you may have with Hudson Mason, which if you've watched him play, there's not a ton. But, I mean, the fact that Georgia's going to have a running back group that really goes five deep. They've got two of the best freshman running backs in the country coming in, and Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, and Brendan Douglas, who played really, really well last year as a backup. With those five guys back, Georgia's going to have the capability, if they so choose, to run the ball 40, 45 times a game. I don't foresee that happening. Bobo likes to balance the offense and disperse the ball and kind of balance the pass and the run. But if the defense is struggling early against a team like Clemson that's really reloading on offense, but we all think Chad Morris can still do some dangerous, dangerous things as an offensive coordinator, if that defense is struggling early on, don't be surprised at all to see them just feed Gurley, feed Marshall, feed Chubb, feed Michelle, feed Douglas, and you'll run out of breath before they do.
And looking at their wide receiver core, I mean, there's just a ton of talent there. But the one thing that, you know, as I'm looking at this roster and looking at their height, there's just not that 6'7", 6'8", kind of receiver where you can throw it up and you know he's going to be able to get up there and catch it. I think your tallest guy is, what, 6'5"?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, from a height perspective, and you know, that's a pretty tall dude. But anymore in the NFL, you want that one guy, that 6'7", 6'8", kind of guy to be able to run up there and get that ball. You know, throw it up there, and he's your guy.
Yeah, I think Jonathan Rumpf would be your guy in that scenario. And he was a junior college transfer last year. He came on strong towards the end of the year, played pretty well throughout the spring. The nice thing about what Georgia does is Georgia loves – they've fallen in love with that back shoulder fade route in the end zone situation, and that's really, really hard to defend. And you've seen guys like Chris Conley has been making that catch for years. If Malcolm Mitchell is healthy, I mean, that was his bread and butter 2 years ago. I mean, he single-handedly bailed Aaron Murray out against Florida 2 years ago just by converting third and long after third and long. And that tandem really worked well. It's going to be fun to watch, I think, Cutson Mason in a lot of ways because he's got really good chemistry with a guy like Chris Conley, for instance. He's a guy that he felt really comfortable with from day one. So that guy's going to be getting a lot of opportunities. Justin Scott Wesley should be back as well from injury. And he was really, of all the injuries outside of Marshall, was probably the one that hurt the most in terms of production. But Justin Scott Wesley might have been the most frustrating because he was a guy who was just starting to really hit his stride. He was really highly recruited, had a great bowl game at the end of the 2012 season, and came out firing in 2013, was hauling in a lot of passes, huge catches against South Carolina and LSU, and then that was just pulled out right from under him. So if he can get healthy, he's really worked on his hands, which was his weakness, which is not a great thing if you're a wide receiver, but his athleticism, his speed, and his ability to get up and make plays, it's phenomenal. So if he gets back to full speed, then there's just going to be a plethora of options that, yeah, maybe they miss the big guy, but I also think they find creative ways to get the ball out there.
But then was it Bennett that tore his ACL on the first play celebrating a touchdown?
That was Malcolm Mitchell.
Mitchell, okay.
Yeah. And Mitchell, you know, we don't talk about him as much, but he's by far the most talented wide receiver of the bunch. You know, he played extremely well as a freshman. He actually opened the sophomore season in 2012 as a defensive back. He started at cornerback the first couple of games, and people, that's the kind of athlete he is. And then he switched sides of the ball and finished second on the team in the receiving. Basically, you know, kind of handled the game against Florida and was a huge leader there. And, you know, unfortunately, last year was pulled right out from under him. But he's a guy that if he's healthy, he's probably got the best hands of any of those guys and by far the most quickness, assuming his knees recovered.
What is his status? Because didn't he tweak that knee again in spring?
Yeah, he tweaked the knee again and has kind of had some issues with it. By all accounts, his most recent injury is really similar to what Michael Bennett had in the middle of last year where they did kind of a scope surgery. They're expecting maybe a 3 to 4 week timetable. It sounds like he's going to be questionable for the opener against Clemson, but they're expecting him back shortly thereafter. So, you know, assuming he can get back, it doesn't sound like an issue that's going to be a prolonged recovery so much as a prolonged kind of patient wait to get him back out there.
What else you got there? Britton, Nick, you got something else for Andrew?
I don't think so. We've covered most of what I know about it. He went way deeper than I could have. So.
Yep, agreed.
Well, let's get right into the schedule then. You know, you start off at Georgia with two really tough games. Get the season opener hosting Clemson. I don't know where to go with that, so I'm gonna defer and let Nick start us off with this one.
You know, this is a very interesting game to me, and you've got South Carolina coming up, and this is just one of those things. I'm sure a lot of people know this with South Carolina playing Clemson at the end of the year. You know, every year is a traditional rivalry game, but this is one of the games that, you know, the two teams that we believe have the best shot to win the SEC East share out of conference, which is kind of rare, you know, if you look back into things. And I think one of the good things for Georgia is they're going to get Clemson early. We talk a lot about that in these non-conference matchups. I mean, Clemson could be a totally different team by the end of the season from South Carolina's standpoint, and that could be a good thing or a bad thing. But I don't know too much about Clemson. Obviously, they've got a lot of weapons to replace. I mean, their offense could be pretty good coming up this year. I think they are going to take a step back. I've got Georgia winning this game, but I think depending on what Georgia can get together on the defensive side of the ball, you know, starting out the year, I mean, that Clemson offense has been pretty productive in the past couple years, but losing Sammy Watkins and, you know, replacing your quarterback, it could be – there's a lot of question marks, I believe, and especially not knowing a lot about Clemson, it's hard to tell.
Britton?
Yeah, I've got Georgia. Again, it's not like I know a ton about Clemson. I'm sure the Georgia and South Carolina guys that we bring on here would know a little bit more about them just because, well, especially South Carolina, obviously playing them every year. But when you know you're replacing the number one receiver drafted in the NFL and Sammy Watkins and Taj Boyd, who was the most productive quarterback I can remember at Clemson. That doesn't mean he actually sits at number one in the record book, but I don't know the Clemson record book like the back of my hand, which I guess that makes me a bad podcaster. And they've never been.
Who wants to know the Clemson?
Clemson guys, I guess. They've never been prolific defensively. I don't know enough to know any reason why that would change. I think Georgia probably gets some sweet revenge from last year and handles them fairly easily, 10-point ball game somewhere in there.
Andrew, I'm going to let you go next.
Yeah.
I really didn't know where I was going to say go with this only because Georgia's going to win this game. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind about that. It's just how impressive can they come out and win this game? I think they want to try to make a statement on defense, and this could be a perfect opportunity because they get a bye week before they go play South Carolina. So that's a really good thing for them to be able to do and come in and make a statement. So that's where I was going was, you know, do I give them a full 2-touchdown win on this type of game? And I'm leaning towards that because I think they want to come out and truly make a statement. I've said that before for Georgia, and sometimes when they come into these big games, they come in flat. And I think that there's going to be a change in mentality, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that's not going to happen this year. At least that's what I'm going with. Andrew?
Yeah, I agree. I think we're all in agreement that Georgia is going to win this football game. And, you know, most of the folks that I talk with, you know, Georgia fans, even ones who aren't, you know, consistently optimistic, feel pretty good about this game. You look back at last year, Georgia came about as close as you can come to winning a game on the road in a season opener against a really good opponent without actually doing so. So they were right there in it. A couple of really bad breaks on special teams, which just, again, plague Georgia year in and year out, it seems like. And that game's going to overtime. And I look at it, and I hate to build too much on last year's games. Obviously, this is a totally different team for Georgia and a totally different team for Clemson. But I do think that home field advantage is going to be a factor for Georgia. And I look at this as strength versus strength. Clemson's front seven on defense is actually going to be really, really strong. And that's something people tend to forget. But they've got a lot coming back, namely Vic Beasley, who terrified Georgia from the defensive end spot last year. But Georgia's offense is really not a concern for me, and I think they're going to be able to do some things. Talk about a game where maybe you get really strategic in game planning, and this is it. If I'm Mike Bobo and I'm Mark Richt, maybe I'm getting together and saying, hey, let's throw this young defense a bone while they're trying to get some momentum. Let's do slow this ball down. We think we can win this game in a shootout if we have to, but let's keep it a little bit lower scoring. Let's use these running backs we've got. I mean, I'd like to think that this could be a low-scoring game in which Georgia wins a 28-14-point affair, and it's 28 points only because Georgia's just eating clock all day.
Now, I'm going to let you stay with it, and you get a bye week, then you get to go travel to Williams-Brice.
I don't know about get to travel to Williams-Brice so much as have to. I mean, even as a fan, not my favorite place to go, but this is going to be the game that, in theory, will probably decide the SEC East on the record books, but as we all know, both Georgia and South Carolina are perfectly capable of losing to an inferior opponent. We saw that with South Carolina and Tennessee last year. We've seen that plenty of times with Georgia, so don't think I'm just taking shots at the Gamecocks. But this is going to be a huge game for everybody. I think Georgia's got a little bit of an easier schedule overall than South Carolina, so I'm not going to go out and say this will definitively decide the SEC East, but it's definitely going to be a factor. With South Carolina on a big picture level, and I wrote a little bit about this actually yesterday on doodoocrazy.net, we're going to find out this year whether we can expect 10 or 11 wins every year from a South Carolina football program. They've won 11 in the last three seasons, and for some reason that tends to be what people remember, but the truth of it is they've only had one other 10-win season in their program's history. They're replacing Connor Shaw. They're winning as quarterback of all time. They're replacing their best player in the program's history in Jadeveon Clowney and probably one of the best defensive players of our era. those aren't easy guys to replace, and I like Dylan Thompson, their quarterback. I think he's going to do a good job, but there's still a lot of question marks, and I'm not quite sure we need to be giving South Carolina the benefit of the doubt as a perennial 10-11 win team. We saw that, but they had some really great players that were kind of leading the way. I hate going to Williams-Brice. If Georgia, this is the game I see Georgia most likely to lose on the regular season slate. I think it is. I really do. I think it's going to actually be a South Carolina victory, but I don't know that that's enough for the Gamecocks to win the East.
Yeah, I'm actually right there with you. This is, Blair talked about this a lot last year. This is a weird series where the winner of this game has actually not gone to the SEC championships, you know, several years in a row now. And it's when it seems like they've won that game, they're in the driver's seat. I think just because it's at South Carolina probably wins it. But when you look at the two teams, it's remarkable the way the schedules fall out. You know, they both play Auburn this year. They both play Clemson. Obviously, they play all the common East opponents. They both have this experienced quarterback coming back who hasn't really played, but he's been there for 3-4 years. Like, they're kind of mirror images of each other. Great running backs, great coaches. The only thing that I think really separates is Georgia has a slight edge in the experience coming back, and then the way that schedule breaks, Georgia actually gets the benefit because they get Auburn coming to Athens. They get Clemson coming to Athens, whereas South Carolina goes to Auburn and to Clemson, and then South Carolina also goes to Florida. Of course, Georgia and Florida always play in Jacksonville. I guess that's not really a home game, but at least it's not a true road game. So I think that all kind of shakes out to South Carolina gets the edge here just because they're at home playing against Georgia, but they wind up losing a game or two more down the stretch than Georgia because of all those factors, and Georgia probably winds up going to the SEC title game.
Nick?
And, you know, I've ridden South Carolina as kind of my favorite in the East this year, and, you know, what Britton said, it's going to be a hard road no matter what, and this game does not make you the SEC East champion, especially two games in the year. So, but I think this, honestly, this is going to be one of my must-watch games. Obviously, it will be, you know, week two, but this is going to be, could be, one of the best matchups in the SEC this year, especially in the East with, you know, so many implications so early. You know, we're used to teams playing cupcakes, and this is going to be real deal football in the second part of, or the second game of the year. So that's one thing to look at. I think that, you know, the power style offenses that they run. And Andrew, I want to hit on this for a second, what you said. Can we expect, you know, 10 and 11 win seasons from South Carolina? Obviously, the last three have been great. And this is something that I think Blair brought up, or we kind of collectively talked about on a podcast a couple podcasts ago, is the fact that Steve Spurrier's best coaching job, you know, when his career is over, could very well be in Columbia instead of in Gainesville. And this could be a defining year for Steve Spurrier. I mean, he's been to the SEC championship. He hasn't picked that one up yet, and a win in the SEC championship would be huge, but you can't overlook Georgia, and it's going to be a really close game no matter what. But like we talk about, especially in the SEC East and especially in these games, you know, that really matter, you've got the home field advantage, and that might be what wins the game for South Carolina.
Yeah, I give South Carolina the edge only because it's a home game at Williams-Brice. And like you said, you have to play there versus get to play, Andrew. And from an outside perspective, without a dog in the hunt, no pun intended, that's a great place to watch a game. And the atmosphere is electric. It's a hostile environment. And for that reason only, I think you guys are both fairly equal on paper. Britton, you said the quarterbacks, they've got some experience both underneath them. But if you remember, Dylan Thompson was actually going to compete for the starting position as the season started last year. They were supposed to be dual starting quarterbacks with him and Connor Shaw. That didn't last very long. I don't even know if it lasted a full game before Spurrier threw that out and said, Connor, you're my guy. Dylan, you're backup. You know, here's your clipboard. So I don't know what that really said about Dylan Thompson to be able to say that all the way through the summer that you were going to have this go in, and it could have just been Spurrier being Spurrier. But I'd hate to see him inflating a person like that just to say, no, we're not going to have you be that quarterback. But I am going to give South Carolina the edge in this game as well. I hate that we all agree right there, but
this is no fun.
I know. We might disagree here in a little bit. I think they're going to lose to Troy, too.
No, I have that as a loss, too. We agree
There we go. Why do these podcasts? I don't think there's any reason to talk about Troy. I think it's a...
Agreed.
I think it's a win for Georgia.
I hope there's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless the injury bug hits again.
And then you get to go host Tennessee. I'm gonna start with this one, and I'm gonna give you a win. We've talked over and over about how, as talented as Tennessee is with the recruits they have coming in, there's no experience on the field. I mean, brand new offensive and defensive lines. They've already snuck up on somebody last year with South Carolina, and there's not going to be a single team. Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, they're not going to let that happen again with Tennessee. So who else are they going to sneak up on in the East? Because they're all going to be prepared. And so that luck that they had against South Carolina is not going to hold true for a second year in a row with knocking off an East opponent.
No, I agree completely. I mean, there's just so much inexperience there, and everything you just said. Tennessee fans are excited about Butch Jones and what he's doing, and I'm sure he's got a lot of momentum there. I grew up in East Tennessee, so I certainly know what Big Orange looks like at its finest, and it's not a pretty color, but I'm sure they're fired up. They had 40,000 people there to watch a practice yesterday, but that doesn't negate the fact that they hadn't had a winning season in the SEC in 5 or 6 seasons. It doesn't negate the fact that they don't have a single returning starter on the offensive or defensive lines. This is going to be a team that's still at least another year away, so Georgia's going to win this game.
Britt and Nick, you got anything you want to add to that?
Not really. I mean, we're going to hit on some of this later, but you know, we've talked about how some of these teams have extremely hard 4-game sets, and you know, we believe that that's going to be the end. I think it was, you know, Auburn or Missouri or some of these teams that we've talked about earlier. But look at the mid-season schedule for Georgia, and I'm not sure it gets any easier for an SEC East team. I mean, you've got Troy, Tennessee, Vandy, Missouri, Arkansas, and a Florida team with question marks, and then Kentucky. I'm sure we're going to hit on a lot of these teams later, but that's just something I wanted to add. I mean, this is going to be a 4-5 game stretch where pretty much all these games are, you know, locks to win.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add on Tennessee. I think they're, the lines of scrimmage are what concerned me the most with Tennessee, and Butch is definitely doing some great things there. They've got momentum going, but like Andrew so eloquently stated, that doesn't mean they're going to put anybody on the field this season that can win a football game. So Georgia's going to handle them.
Britton, we'll stay with you and let you kick us off with Vanderbilt.
All right. I've got a win here as well. I am selling Vanderbilt stock right now. I don't dislike the hire. I just think that the kind of coach you have to have at Vanderbilt is a James Franklin type of coach. We talked about it ad nauseum with Bruce Pearl in the SEC on the basketball side. And Vanderbilt to me is that way for football. And he's just the total opposite of Franklin. I think they won't be a pushover because there's talent there that Franklin, the talent that he didn't take with him to Penn State. So it's not – they have better talent than they've had there in years still. And so I think they'll still be a tough out, but I'm just selling their stock right now, and I don't think they're going to go bowling this year.
Nick?
Yeah, let me tell you what, Britton, that's an excellent point. And we've talked a little bit about this, but Mason is a guy, great coach, great defensive guy, but I think you have to have that, you know, mentality of, you know, go out and knock them dead like James Franklin did, and you know, we've talked about it time and time again, but James Franklin brought an excitement and intensity to a program that, you know, in Nashville doesn't have too many fans, and he was successful in putting some butts in the seats, but at the same time, I think they will take a step back this year, even though they lost some talent and they've got some returning, but I think this is an easy win for Georgia.
Andrew?
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement for all those things that you guys just said. I'll be short with it, but the bottom line is Vanderbilt just doesn't – they've recruited well on Vanderbilt standards, but they're not going to have the talent to beat a team like Georgia, and they're not going to have the rah-rah cheerleader motivator that's going to get this talent to play, you know, at its peak level for 4 full quarters. And on top of that, Georgia kind of has a pattern of letting Vandy hang around for too long 1 year and then really, really whooping up on the Commodores the next. Last year, Georgia actually lost to Vanderbilt. So I can see Georgia pulling away with a, you know, 5-6 touchdown win in this game.
This is becoming a boring podcast. No, it's still, we're still good stuff. I mean, we all just are echoing different things, but it's a win for Georgia. Vanderbilt's going to have its issues. It's going to be, I think they have a, they're another team that could have a better product on the field this year and still not have any more wins. Because, you know, like Britton said, there's so many, and we talked about this on the Vanderbilt podcast, Franklin had so many red shirts last year that never saw playing action that now get to play. So he's got a ton of talent that he was able to keep in the cupboard, and so he didn't leave it bare. But there again, is it able to compete with the talent that Georgia's going to put on the field? And I don't think so. So next we'll be heading to Columbia, Missouri. So you get to travel to both Columbias. Lucky you. Missouri's another program. When we did the podcast for them, it's just they could be a nine-win program or they can be barely making it to a bowl game. We just don't know what we're going to see out there in the other Columbia. But, you know, for me, I think Georgia's going to handle this one, and I don't see much of an issue with it. Nick, we'll let you start off next.
Yeah, I think I notably said this on the Missouri podcast that this could be an upset alert, and you guys almost talked me out of it. But at the same time, there's just this little aura that I have about Missouri. I mean, Pinkel did a great job last season. They surprised everybody. I mean, I just saw Chris Lowe tweet out this picture that, you know, said what all the experts had to say about Missouri last year, and they were picking them 13th and 14th in the SEC. And I mean, obviously, they surprised everybody. It's going to be extremely hard to duplicate what they did last year and losing Michael Sam, losing easily, and losing your quarterback in Franklin. I mean, Matty Mock could be one of these guys. We know he can throw it around, but his inconsistency worries me a little bit. I mean, this could be a 17-point win for Georgia, even though it's on the road. But I've got them winning, but I would say if there's one game that you had to pick that isn't, you know, an Auburn game or isn't, you know, this Clemson or South Carolina game that you expect Georgia to win, but they may not, it would be this Missouri game. But like I said, I've got them winning.
Britton.
Yeah, I'm concerned about Missouri. I think they probably come back to earth a little bit this year, as we talked about in the Missouri podcast, although they probably still have a really good shot at having an 8-plus win season, but I just think that they're not going to have the charmed season that they had last year, and one of the evidences of that lack of charm would be Georgia dominating them in this game.
Yeah, when I look at this game, there's just too many question marks for Missouri, and even if you take Georgia out of it, I don't understand quite where all this Matty Mock hype is coming from. This is a guy that completed 51% of his passes last year, and his leading receiver targets were 6'6", 6'5", and 6'5". And guess what? All three of those guys are gone. He's lost his running back, most of their best defensive players from a team that was first in the SEC in turnover margin are gone. There's just way too many question marks, and I think Pinkel's a great coach. I think he does a really good job with what he has, but this is probably the year that you start to see a lack of talent and a lack of depth in these recruiting classes start to come to fruition. I mean, when Darrile Green, Beckham, and guys like that were there, and Henry Josey, you could have one or two stars that can make an impact, but you saw when they weren't healthy and weren't effective what that meant in the SEC in 2012. Well, those guys aren't going to be healthy this year because they're all gone, and there's just not enough talent, I don't think, in Missouri to really compete year in and year out, at least not at this point, with a Georgia. I mean, they had a great year last year, and I really don't want to take anything away from them for that. I mean, if you took Auburn out of the SEC last year, I mean, all of a sudden we're all talking about the dream season Missouri had. I mean, they had a great year where everything clicked, but a lot of that was stuff that's hard to replicate, like turnovers, and so I think Georgia's going to win this game fairly comfortably.
All right, so I don't think there's any reason to talk about the next one either. I hate to say that about an SEC opponent, but it's Arkansas.
That's where Arkansas is right now, though. I think we've glossed over them on every podcast except for the Arkansas podcast.
Where we had to talk about them.
Yeah.
But then you get the cocktail party, and I don't care what anybody else says, it's still the cocktail party. You get Florida at Jacksonville. To me, that's one of the games. I'm going to give them a loss. I think they're going to. I'm going to say they're losing two games. So I've already given you my two losses. If we go back to the Florida podcast, it might be different. I don't know. But you know, you look at that game, and that's one of those trap games for Georgia. That it's always a tough game. It's a tough battle. It's always a great game to watch, no matter how bad or good a program is. And Florida's on the rebound. Florida's going to be better. I don't think there's. I wouldn't give them the dark horse moniker that others have to say they're the dark horse favorite to win the East, but. You know, when you get an improved program, and they've still got a good defense, and like you, they were hit with the injury bug pretty hard last year as well. So, you know, I've got to give them a second loss, and I'm gonna have a surprise upset later. So I'm going to give them the loss here.
Yeah, Florida's never going to be a game that I feel good about. I mean, Georgia could be undefeated, and Florida could be winless heading into it. And it's just one of those rivalries that kind of defies logic, but – you know, when you're pushed to make a prediction, I have a really hard time seeing the offensive improvement for Florida that a lot of folks are seeing with Kurt Roper. And Kurt Roper did great things last year and the year before at Duke, but people kind of lose the fact that he had some pretty mediocre seasons with the same level of talent at Duke. And it's easy to look at what he did, but he also spent most of his time at Duke with a co-coordinator, and he had one last year on the offensive side of the ball. So I don't really know how much credit we can directly give Roper. Maybe it's all of it. Maybe he was held back by the other coordinator. But I don't think we know that just yet. And we've seen Florida, you know, continually struggle with good offensive minds on the offensive side of the ball. And I think a lot of that comes back to just a lack of emphasis placed there because you have a defensive-minded head coach. But, I mean, this is a team that's got to come a long, long way back. And they were bit by the injury bug, but they were also bit by Georgia Southern. And, you know, in the state of Georgia, that's still something we'll never quite forget. So I can't really say that Georgia Southern is going to beat a team one year and Georgia's going to lose to that same team the next year and keep any degree of integrity. So I certainly can't predict a loss for Georgia, but not a game you're comfortable with either way.
Yeah, so this is a tough one. I'm actually, Shane, really glad that I wasn't able to be on the Florida podcast because I just don't know what I think about Florida, and I would have had a really hard time picking their schedule and, you know, the things that we do. My gut just tells me that Jeff Driskel really isn't that good. Even though he was a five-star coming out and all-world and all that, I don't know if these offensive coordinators just haven't been able to figure it out or if he just doesn't have whatever it is that makes you good at the college level because he's got the athletic ability. I do think hopefully they're finally going to figure out with Kurt Roper that you need to be more shotgun, more quarterback running incorporated into your offense with an athlete like Driskel. But my gut still tells me that he's really not that good. So I think Georgia is a two-loss team, and despite all that I just said about not trusting Florida, I'm predicting a Florida win here because I can't predict the other team to beat them after what happened last year. So I'm going with Florida, but I really have no idea what I'm even talking about right now because I don't know what to do with Florida, and I don't trust them.
Yeah, you know, Britton, you made the analogy that you were going to sell Vanderbilt stock right now. I just can't bring myself to buy into Florida this year. I mean, I'm not going to say I was holding Florida stock at all, but at the same time, I mean, you're expecting an uptick, you're hoping an uptick from the season that they had a year ago, but there's just a lot of question marks for me. I mean, Driskel on that shortened season, we still don't know what he really looks like in true SEC play. And late in the season like this, I mean, obviously anything can happen in this game. But in my mind, Georgia comes out with a victory. But Andrew, you know, made a good point that it's really hard. This is like an Iron Bowl game for them. It's really hard for, you know, anybody to predict these rivalry games, you know, in August, you know, mid-August where we are right now. So you guys kind of threw a wrench in there. I didn't really know that we'd have two Florida victories on the podcast, but it's making it fun. So.
See, all of a sudden it's interesting again.
Yeah.
It's interesting because we're talking about Kentucky. Did you know Kentucky played basketball this weekend?
SEC Network.
Yeah, thanks to the SEC Network.
I mean, We had basketball. It was great. No, Georgia. For those that don't know, I'm the Kentucky fan. So, but Georgia gets to go up to Lexington November 8th. It's a win. Sorry, Georgia's going to win this one.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Anybody else? Anything beg to differ? Anything they want to add?
Nope.
There's always a chance, but till they can prove it, prove that they can win, I can't pick them to win. Now, after that, though, they get to host Auburn, and I think Britton alluded to it. They're not going to let it happen again this year. And for that reason alone, looking at this schedule, and that's the only reason I'm doing this, looking at the schedule, there's two losses. Where those two losses are, I picked Florida, because I couldn't see them losing to Auburn 2 years in a row, especially after the way last year ended. That's me. Who else?
Yeah, this is the same. I'm going to say the exact same thing when we do Alabama. There is no way on God's green earth Georgia is losing to Auburn this year. It's just not going to happen. They could spot them 50 points and Georgia would still come out and win, because there's just no way that they're going to allow Auburn to win this game. So I got Georgia.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I mean, I look at Georgia's schedule and you really kind of see four potential hazards: Clemson, South Carolina, Florida, and Auburn. And of those, Auburn's the game I'm most confident at this juncture that Georgia will win. You look at Jeremy Pruitt and what he did at Florida State. He knows to some degree how to stop this Auburn offense, but even if he can't, look at what Georgia was able to do last year. I mean, really just a miracle away from doing that. And that was with a completely stunted first half of offense for Georgia. Georgia only scored one touchdown in the first half. They punted on three drives, threw an interception on one drive, and time ran out on another. I mean, that was not a good game from Georgia. It was a great and thrilling fourth quarter until the very end, and that was fun to watch. But watching that game as a Georgia fan, it was one of the more poor performances Georgia had last year, and that's saying something given all the injuries they had. There's no way they let Auburn come back to Athens and beat them 2 years in a row.
Yeah, and I mean, I totally agree with you guys. I just couldn't give Georgia that Florida loss in my mind just because I'm so down on Florida. But this game is probably, I mean, it's crazy to think about from an Auburn standpoint, you know, how many of these games late in the season that you're going to have that, you know, revenge is going to be hot and heavy on these teams. But you look at Georgia and Alabama, they're going to be motivated to not let those late game wins happen against Auburn. I mean, Georgia's going to be coming out of the gate trying to, you know, eliminate the run from Auburn. And with still questions on how much Nick Marshall can throw the ball, we think that they're going to try to throw it more this year. But he's still an unproven quarterback throwing the ball. And, I mean, if Georgia can ride that rushing attack with, you know, Gurley and Marshall and escape the injury bug, this could be a win. I'm predicting a loss because I got to get them at two losses, but it's still going to be a great game, and I think Georgia more than likely will come out with the victory.
All right, so we've got three folks on this podcast that have Georgia with two losses, if my memory serves correctly, and one with one loss. Is that right, Andrew?
That's right.
I mean, we can talk about it. The next two games are Charleston Southern and Georgia Tech, and I don't see a loss. Yeah.
When is the last time Georgia Tech beat Georgia? Andrew, do you know?
2008, I believe, is Paul Johnson's first year. Okay. So 08. And I think that's the only time in the last 14 seasons, something like that.
So
hammer and a nail.
11, with 11 wins, I think you're pretty much assured a shot at the SEC championship game at that point.
Yeah, and that's really kind of what I foresee for Georgia. I mean, who knows, you know, we're 10 days away from the season starting, and Georgia may put forth a performance against Clemson that makes me scratch my head and say this is a 7-5 football team. But, you know, given what we know about the offense and what we hope to see from the defense and a schedule that really, as you guys touched on, it's pretty favorable. I mean, getting Auburn at home, getting Florida at a neutral site, that in my mind is as much of a factor in deciding the SEC East as the actual Georgia-South Carolina game. I mean, I just think –
And not to mention South Carolina has A&M as their other West opponent.
Right, exactly. So I think Georgia really, I expect them to lose to South Carolina, and I'd love to be wrong on that. Don't get me wrong. I've got two older sisters that went to South Carolina, would love nothing more than to be able to, you know, rub it in for 2 years in a row. But at the same time, it's hard to expect that on the road.
Anything else you want to add before we wrap this up? I want to, Andrew, thank you for joining us. I know it's the first time you've been on. Hope it's not going to be the last. I hope you had a good time here.
Yeah, I had a blast. Thanks for having me. Be sure to check out our stuff on doodoocrazy.net, and that's about all I got.
All right. Britton, you got anything?
No, I'm good. That was fun.
All right. Nick?
Same. I mean, if you look at it from a Georgia standpoint, it's going to be a good redemption year if the season comes out like we did, like we've predicted from that injury bug last year. And you think about, you know, if none of those guys would have went down, the talent that they have coming back, what could have been last year. And I know Georgia fans don't want to do that, but at the same time, that leaves you, you know, sitting pretty this year. So it's going to be a great year to watch Georgia football and a great year in the SEC East, which I think a lot of people write off, you know, with the talent been in the West for the past 5 or 10 years. But South Carolina and Georgia, you know, duking it out to the final whistle, it's going to be great.
Yeah, I think what you hit on a little bit, there's going to be a little more balance between the East and West this year. With all the players over the last couple of years that have gone to the NFL from LSU and from Alabama, you know, there's still a couple of question marks. Alabama quarterback, how well is he going to do? LSU quarterback, how well are you going to have that position? You've got a great running back coming in. But there's a little more balance, and I think you've got where everything was West-driven for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. You're going to get this East come up, and Georgia's got a great opportunity to be in the driver's seat for that and head into the first year of the national championship to represent the SEC. So I'm excited about it. I've always liked watching Georgia. They play an exciting brand of football, and so I can't wait to see how close we are with our predictions and see how well we do. I want to thank everybody for listening. It's been a great hour or so that we've done this podcast. We've got about five more teams, I think, 5 or 6 more teams to look at, if my memory serves correct. So be looking for lots of new podcasts over the next 10 to 12 days leading up to kickoff. And, guys, with that, we are going to call this podcast done.